Good morning. We're bringing our March 10th meeting or workshop to order. Can we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today for our workshop. And those of you that are listening online, I'd like to introduce my dais guest. To my left, Mr. Carl Persis, representing District 4. Mr. Ruben Colon, representing District 5. Our school board attorney has a guest today, and can you tell us your name, please?
I'm Aaron Wolf, Ted Doran's partner.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf. Mr. Doran is out of the country, and we probably won't let him come back for 14 days after he's quarantined.
To my make that 28 days.
28 days.
Second that.
Mrs. Erin Lieberman, our agency clerk. Sitting next to her, we have Mrs. Jamie Haynes representing District 1. Next to Ms. Haynes, we have Mrs. Linda Cuthbert, our vice chair, representing District 3. Next to Ms. Cuthbert, we have our superintendent, Dr. Scott Fritz, and I'm Ida Wright, representing District 2 chairman for this year. At this time, we're going to move on to our agenda to item 2.01, Florida Best Standards. Dr. Fritz.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. This is a very exciting time for the state of Florida. As standards change, and if they've changed around the country over the years, it certainly is an impact to school districts. It impacts the way we do our business, the way we give our instruction, our materials that we use, the assessments that we use, the professional learning we give our educators in the classroom. And so I feel very blessed that Volusia County has played an active role in the development of these standards. I'm going to ask Dr. Balgobin to come forward and introduce her team and to share a little bit about how the teams interacted with the state in developing these standards.
Good morning, Madam Chair, School Board Member, Superintendent Fritz. Thank you for the opportunity of giving the Teaching and Learning Division this opportunity here today to present the Florida Best New Standards. I have with me here today Ms. Robin Dietry and Ms. Sandra Tweedy. And I'd like to share with you Ms. Robin Dietry. She's a fourth grade teacher at Citrus Grove Elementary and a former Volusia County Teacher of the Year. She was identified by the Florida Department of Education to participate as an expert, ELA expert for the Florida Standard Process. Also, Ms. Sandra Tweedy, who's here with me today, she's our district secondary math specialist, who was also identified by the Florida Department of Education to participate in the Florida Review Standards for Math. Both of them are here, and they will be leading this presentation. Thank you.
School Board members and Superintendent Fritz, today we have the great privilege to present to you Florida's newly adopted ELA and math standards, which are called Florida's Best Standards, best standing for Benchmarks for Excellent Student Thinking. This all came to pass because of Executive Order 1932, in which Governor DeSantis directed that by January 1st, 2020, the Commissioner of Education would review Florida's K through 12 reading and math standards, and he specifically wanted in this decree to eliminate Common Core, to make Florida number one in the nation, and to increase the knowledge of our Florida students in terms of American civics. And he wanted in this process to involve all stakeholders, so including parents, teachers, everyone that would be involved in the educational process. In order to do this, he had some success criteria for the standards. He wants Florida to be number one in the nation for our education, leading the nation in students graduating high school, earning college degrees, and also earning industry certifications. And also, he wanted the new standards to support our achievement in both ACT, SAT, and the NAEP test. To do this, he charged Jacob Oliva as Chancellor of the Division of Public Schools and Kathy Nobles to lead this charge. And for the ELA department, which is who I worked with, Michael DiPiero was our point of contact, and Rebecca Mead and Carrie Sweet from Just Read Florida were the ones that specifically led me.
And for mathematics, PJ Duncan was our point of contact, and working with us was Courtney Starling, and she is our current state math specialist. Cassie was also assisting us, but she has moved on to a new position.
So in terms of involving all stakeholders, you may read on social media that these standards just were created by a few people, but that just simply is not true. And you can see from looking at the slide that there were a great number of people that were involved in creating these new standards. I personally was chosen as an ELA expert, and so my process started almost a year ago, starting out with doing virtual meetings with experts across the state targeting specific standards, and then moving on to face-to-face meetings and reviewing standards on EdCredible.
And likewise, I started about a year, it was a little over a year ago, with webinars face-to-face. We ended up with face-to-face meetings. And we've included all stakeholders from STEM, FCR STEM, our Florida Association group, supervisors, teachers, parents, where we did look at every single comment that was given to us from EdCredible, the site that they used, and we took into account all of the feedback when we were designing the standards.
So throughout the year, changes were continuously made based on the public's feedback. And in addition, both the ELA and the math standards were taken across the state with town hall meetings that anybody was able to attend and also give their feedback.
And it's important to know that nothing would pass unless there was a complete consensus as we were working through the verbiage of the standards.
The standards were officially adopted in February at the state board school board meeting.
Right. Some key differences that you're going to see with our new standards. First of all, we've eliminated Common Core, so the wording, even the coding, has been eliminated. But more importantly, these standards have been designed by Florida citizens, stakeholders, teachers, parents with their input. So it's not a nationally designed state of standards. It is Florida grown. Also, you're going to see that there is some content rich that's been implemented. Classical literature has come back, and I'm going to let Robin speak to that.
So content rich is really important, I think, because the acknowledgement is being made that reading comprehension is not just a set of skills, but that it is very much impacted by a student's academic and background knowledge. And so, therefore, these new standards take that into account and have included within the standards a push to build students' academic knowledge to then impact their reading comprehension.
And there's also a push to for our early grades in fluency in mathematics. So you're going to see for each grade level there is fluency requirements. So we're bringing the basics back to our early years. And one example would be we're now moving a division by standard algorithm back to fifth grade where it was in sixth. The other thing that you're going to notice is the new BEST standards, they're very easy to read and understandable by parents, teachers, students, all across the board. The benchmarks have clarifications that have been included for each one, so it is very easy to determine what exactly needs to be taught and learned for each one of those standards. In addition, they are providing a glossary for all teachers and parents and students. In this glossary, you're going to see the vocabulary word along with the definition and an example. And there's at least over 200 vocabulary words, along with all of the formulas that are required for the students and teachers to know, and in addition, all of the properties that need to be taught for mathematics.
And this is going to be really important because there's a lot of standards that teachers even still today are confused by, for example, point of view and perspective. So these standards are making it very clear what is point of view, what is perspective, so that the parents understand, the students understand, the teachers understand, and we are not going to have 8 years of unpacking the standards.
Right. And again, everything is developmentally across and appropriate. For instance, the standards start off with exploring the concepts, and then it gets into our procedural, and then it gets into fluency. So there had always been a talk about there. We lost our directive on fluency and our focus on fluency, which is in this case, you're going to see those fluency requirements are across the grade bands. There is also going to be actionable steps to reduce testing. For instance, the EOC for geometry and for grade 9 ELA is going to be eliminated. In addition, the testing will be shortened. There will be not as many questions on the math assessments, which will mean that the test will be given in one day instead of multiple days. Also, the word passages for ELA will be reduced. So those are just some of those reductions that we are going to see. Again, that concise and clear expectations we're going to see throughout the standards. And for one example, when we were talking about functions in secondary math, there was always, well, where do we stop in Algebra 1 and where does it begin in Algebra 2? It is clearly defined now. So we're very pleased to see that. All right, so some of the top 9 features that you're going to see regarding the math standards. One of them is that it ends the confusing math that seemed to be the roadblock for our parents and assisting their students at home. And like I said, there's going to be clear expectations. The standards are very clearly written, along with the clarifications that are provided. And the glossary that I spoke of, again, is going to assist our parents, students, and our teachers. Flexibility is now going to be given into the method that they're using on the assessment. So we're going to focus on not so much the method that they're using, but we're going to focus on them getting also the correct answer. Not that the methods are going away. They're still there, but they're just not going to be tested for proficiency. We're looking for them to decide which method they would like to use in order to get the correct answer. We're also going to see that we're going to make the balance between the fluency, the conceptual, and the application of the standards. And hopefully this will help our struggling students as they are building their fluency skills. We have now added financial literacy throughout all of the secondary math courses. So not only simple and compound interest will be seen, but they're also students will be looking at short-term versus long-term loans and also mortgages. So some of our real-life applications of financial literacy is now going to be incorporated. Again, I talked about how we're moving those basic masteries to our K-5 level. And one example that I gave you is, again, the standard algorithm for division will now go back to fifth grade. The glossary I spoke of, I think this is going to be the biggest help for all of stakeholders, because to have that word, the vocabulary word, along with the definition and an example, so it would be clear for our parents and our students to see exactly, you know, what this definition means in the context. And again, the clear indications of what is going to be taught at each course and grade level. So there's, again, no more unpacking the standards and figuring out what's going to be taught at each grade level and where does it start and where does it begin. It is clearly defined in our standards.
So in terms of ELA, one of the major things is that we will be the first in the nation to have a book list for every grade, and those the list of books encompasses classic literature from Brown Bear, Brown Bear, and kindergarten all the way through Romeo and Juliet, and just some really great literature that I think teachers will be very pleased, and I think parents as well. There are multicultural texts listed in there. There are content-oriented texts so that address social studies and science as we're building our students' academic knowledge. And every major literary period will be covered from classical all the way through contemporary. It is a part of the standards. It's listed for teachers to know. There is a civic literacy reading list for every grade that is included in the standards. One thing that I think a lot of parents will be very happy about is that cursive is in the standards for both third and fourth. In third, it's introduced. In fourth, the expectation is that it would be fluently the students would be able to use it and also be able to read it. Students cannot read the Bill of Rights without being able to read cursive, so certainly that is going to be a benefit to our students. Another thing that's very revolutionary in the nation is that we will have benchmarks for secondary students who are not proficient in reading and writing, and these will be tailored right to them, whereas at this current time, students in secondary classrooms that are not reading where they should be are having to use standards for K-1 and 2 students. So these standards will specifically meet their needs. Rhetoric has been moved from 9th grade to 6th grade. Since we're expecting students to write argumentative essays, the expectation is that they then need that logic and reasoning sooner than 9th grade. So that has been moved to 6th grade. As we've already discussed, there are really amazing clarifications that I think are going to help our teachers and students and parents know exactly what the expectation is for each benchmark. And there's a glossary then that further gives definitions of the terms that we have in the standard so that we're all on the same page using the same language and there's not confusion amongst our parents, our students, our teachers. I think when you look at the standards that you are going to be very excited. I personally can't wait to implement them. And so with that being said, let's look at the timeline to implement. So when we look at the 2020-21 school year, this is when for ELA professional development would begin. And we would all still be teaching the current standards that we have at this point. In terms of instructional materials, next year for ELA is our K-12 ELA adoption. So we would be looking at materials next year in terms of adoption. And then, but we still would be, next year would be implementing our current ELA materials. For elementary, that is the Wonders material that we purchased new this year. And we still, for 3rd through 12th grade, would be under the current ELA tests. The following year, 21-22, our K through 2nd grade classrooms would begin the implementation of the new standards, and they would be utilizing the new materials. And then everyone else, 3rd through 12th, would be receiving professional development, but they still would be under the current standards that we have in the current tests. And then the following year, 2022-23, is where we would implement the new standards, and we would also, the 3rd through 12th would be utilizing the new materials, and they would be under the new assessments that would be targeting the new standards.
And for math, when we begin next year with the professional development, and that will continue all the way through implementation and beyond. For the standards, we're going to be using the current K-12 standards, and the new standards would be implemented in 22-23. Our K-12 math adoption is going to happen in the year 21-22. So we're ELA is a year ahead of us, so they're having to move a bit quicker than we are currently in mathematics. So right now we're going to be using our current materials, and the new materials that will be adopted in 21-22, we will be using those in 22-23. And the statewide assessments are going to continue the same as we have now, but in year 22-23, we will have our new assessments, which will be eliminating the geometry EOC, and will now, you know, go from 3 through Algebra 1. So as far as assessments, you know, as far as key milestones for this, the item development is going to begin later this year. They have not publicized a date at this time, but is the expectation that that process will be beginning later this year. Assessments aligned to the best standards, again, will be administered in the year 2023. All right, so that will be our first year of the new assessments on our best standards. And then to emphasize that necessary focus we need for reading mastery, the grade 3 ELA test is going to be 100% focused on reading. And that will occur in spring of 2023 also. So some 5 big assessment wins for students and parents and teachers that we're looking at. We're going to be reducing the actual time that our students and teachers are spending on state tests and getting results. And by Well, the way we're going to do that is we're eliminating, again, the geometry EOC and the ninth grade ELA test, and that is going to happen in 22-23, as I spoke before. In addition, there will be less problems on the math assessments, which means that the assessment will be able to be given in one day. In addition, there's going to be less words on the reading passages for ELA, so that will delete some of the time, although they will be able to give the test over, you know, the multiple days. But just by eliminating the time for the math assessments, you know, and eliminating two of the EOCs, we are going to be able to reduce that time. We're going to be reducing unnecessary and duplicate testing. So, again, when we're looking at eliminating the EOC for geometry, we are going to bring in the SAT and the ACT test as a requirement, although a particular score is not needed for graduation. But our assessments are going to be aligned to that SAT and ACT requirement, which are tests that we know our students and our parents understand and value. Again, aligned to these, as we talked about, the SAT, ACT, and for college readiness, and we are going to have a Florida Civics literacy test given in the senior year.
So there are many implications as a result of the new standards for our school district, and so we've just listed some to begin thinking about. Training, as we said, would begin for ELA and math next year. Implementation for K-2 would begin in the 21-22 school year, and then the following year, ELA and math, K-12. In terms of assessment, as we've shared, we would be under the current standards for next year and the following year, and then in 2022-23 is where we would start seeing the assessments that are aligned to the new standards. It's really important that we have a positive rollout with these standards, and that we embed it in the district strategic plan as we're looking forward. And then we also, as we look at adopting our textbooks for ELA would be next year, really looking at how they're aligned to the new standards and making sure that we have the best core and supplemental materials for our teachers. So we are on our way to an A, the first way. And we just wondered if you have any comments or questions.
I have a lot, but I'm going to be quiet. Who would like to go first? Okay, Linda?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have several questions and comments, but if you can't answer them or if they haven't been addressed by the state yet, just let me know.
Okay.
It's just a question. I left the classroom in 2012, and that was just before the full implementation of the FSA. I taught secondary English, so I'm very interested. I also taught rhetoric. I'm very concerned of it moving from ninth grade to sixth grade. Not that the students can't handle it, but I'm also concerned, are we going to give our sixth grade ELA teachers specific training how to teach, what is rhetoric, and how to teach it?
So that is one of the great things about the new standards, is that it's very clear in the standards with the glossary and the appendix. That has been very clearly delineated, and I do believe that that would be part of our training also, though, as we look forward.
Okay. I strongly suggest, at the time when the FSA came out, I have a daughter who was teaching fourth grade, and she called me when the new FSA test came out and said, argumentative essays to fourth graders. She had not done that since college, so 15 years had passed. And so she called me. It was a good resource for her. But is when we do roll this out, is there someone that teachers who struggle with it or don't know how to put it in layman's terms during the class period can call if we have a support from the district or from the high school, someone that they can call to say, how do I create a lesson for this? These are the questions I'm getting from the students. I don't know how to answer them. Will we have a support group for those teachers.
Ms. Cuthbert, you can count on that.
Okay, good.
As we review the materials, we will assess where our teachers are and what will be their needs. And we will have a group, actually a cadre of teachers that will be sitting in reviewing those materials so that they can dissect and tell us a little bit where they think some might be some of the avenues or some of the ways in which we will have to really ensure trainings are very deliberate, intentional, but also that we have a support system in place. So that will be there for our teachers. We want to ensure that they're successful with the implementation.
Okay.
Ms. Cuthbert, before you move on, I'm going to stay right there. So my question would be, and I think that would be up to the board, as we move forward, if we know that we have new plans or new standards, it is upon us to make sure we have some financing available in the summer prior to make sure that all of our teachers get training and where they as a group, based on that age group, can unpack this. And so we know it's coming. We know it's in 2022 and 2023. It is our responsibility to make sure we look at funding, how we're going to make this happen.
100%, Ms. Wright.
Especially use teachers who actually teach the material and not someone who's unaware of rhetoric or even know what it means. You can understand what it means, but you don't know how to interpret it.
Correct.
You know, at a level. And you all know that. Okay, what about grammar and sentence structure, language usage? I see no emphasis.
Grammar is in the standards, and it's actually very well delineated from K to 12, what the expectations would be for each grade as we move forward. Now, what should students be able to do in moving all the way through? And I can reference I can let you know what page that is on.
And also, is it taught? Will a lot of these items be taught in isolation, or will they all be connected to reading comprehension?
So that is really a huge philosophy shift with the new standards, and part of why I'm very excited about them is that it is stopping looking at reading as just a set of discrete skills where I'm just doing this one skill, I'm doing theme today, and not acknowledging that that benchmark theme is built by looking at figurative language, by looking at the other benchmarks. So it's really looking at how they stack together these benchmarks to create theme, as opposed to looking at just one standard at a time.
Wonderful.
Yes, very wonderful.
Thank you. As long as it's inclusive, and again, there's that support that needs to come from teachers.
Yes.
Because if you're taught in isolation, it doesn't work. And that could be a key to our reading comprehension.
So, page 196 to page 197 is where you see the progression by grade level for the grammar standards.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you happen to know that as we move into these new tests, will these be tests tied to graduation like the FSA is?
The accountability.
The Algebra 1 will.
They will?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only one. Right,
it's still going to be tied to graduation. Mm-hmm. Will, do you think the state, have you heard anything, if the state is going to give our students an alternative method for graduation, like passing a certification in a CTE course? Has that been discussed at all?
It hasn't been discussed at any of the meetings that I've been at.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's something that maybe we as a district can address.
Well, according to FSBA, looking at the new standards, if we can use them in the in our career academies, they think that in itself, if they can tie it to that academy, then students will be able to graduate. So in essence, it's not designated as a way to graduate, but if our teachers are successful in delivering it in their academy, then their students will pass not just the exam, but will pass and graduate.
And we are losing the FSA tests after next year, correct? They're going away?
No, we would be under the current FSA tests would be for the next two years. And
two
then
years.
2022-23 would be the new test.
Okay, do you have any idea? Have they discussed who's going to develop them? Is it going to be a company? Is it homegrown?
Right. That is up to the TDC, our Test Development Center, in the state of Florida. So they're in charge of that.
Okie dokie. talked about the range. Are they cutting back? Hopefully they won't be testing kindergartners. I mean,
we've not seen any indication for testing of K-2. No.
Okay, so K-2 is pretty much. So the first grade that would be tested would be about third grade then.
Yes, ma'am.
That's wonderful. I wonder if, and this is just me, and it's just a comment, I'm just wondering if the state's going to spend less on testing. That would be nice to put more back into the education budget. That's really good. I'm really glad to hear about the SAT and the ACT testing direction, because you're absolutely right. It is what our public understands.
Can I get one more question from
you?
So that can give everybody
yes,
this
I'm
opportunity?
Sorry, I could keep going on.
Okay.
I apologize. Let my colleagues continue. Thank you.
So are the standards, were there conversations to align them more towards the SAT and the SAT so that we're not creating state standards that won't align with national standards? Is that sort of the conversation?
That is the discussion, that our assessments will be directly aligned to our SAT, ACT.
Okay. How far off is our current material, do you think, from what the proposed standards are going to be? For ELA, let's say.
I think that there are some basic reading things like main idea and details, inferencing, that any piece of text can be utilized to cover those standards. So certainly the text could be utilized for all the standards. In terms of the teacher manual aspect of it, that's the part that I think will have to be looked at to make sure that, and there could be aspects of it that's aligned and aspects that are not. But even what we have currently is not 100% aligned to our current standards. So that's where teacher discretion and knowledge of our standards comes in.
Great. And the EOC being eliminated for geometry and ELA, is that by cohort? In other words, if my son is supposed to take the geometry EOC and he decides I don't want to take it, he's in ninth grade, will he be exempt from that?
Those tests will no longer be given in 22-23.
But your son's in ninth grade this year, right?
He's in ninth
grade. So are
mine.
So they are still in place.
I asked her that, right?
Right.
And then one last question, and I guess it's more of a comment, and it goes along with what both Linda and Ida said, is I'm sure, and we'll have a district training plan, but, you know, what do you need from us? And, of course, I put funding. And so, again, you know, to get these rolled out, because I don't know much about your world, and I'll admit that, but, you know, unpacking the standards, they're still in the suitcase, and we're still unpacking them, whatever that means. And so, you know, I think it's time to, have something that's in a clear suitcase rather than having to constantly be unpacked and ensure that our teachers. I remember my daughter started with Ms. Simpson at Spirit Elementary, and I remember saying, can you give us something that we can help her at home? And they gave me these links to the textbook company, which made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And of course, the teacher was learning it as well. It was the first year or so. I think that glossary is going to be huge for our parents. So
yes. It is.
Thank you.
That's it. Thank you.
Jamie?
So I'd like to start by saying thank you to both of you, because you've given up already a year or slightly over a year of your lives to work on these committees to put forth new standards that are not only going to be what's best for our students, but you considered the families. I mean, so many times in education, we don't stop and consider parents or, you know, the families at home and what do they need, because parents care. I mean, they care about their children and they care about the education. And the highlight today, you know, I'm so happy to see the way we've gone and what we're doing in math is back to where I think we need to be. But the fact that as each of you worked on these committees is that you put the family piece as a focal point in that. This way, parents can understand and they can help their children at home. Their kids will no longer be going home where parents throw up their hands and they get on social media and they say, I don't know how to help my child, or I don't know what they're doing, I don't understand this. And so I want to thank both of you, because not only have you done your regular job, you've given up so much of your time to do this. And I know it's not over yet. You have more tasks coming up that you're going to have to face. And so I appreciate both of you and the time that you've given. And it's also nice to dispel the, you know, rumors out there that no one has really participated in writing this, because we are fortunate. We have two people right here in Volusia County that help. Mm-hmm. So I've had a chance to, you know, speak with Robin prior to this about a lot of things. And Sandra, at some point I'd like to talk to you, because, you know, math's my passion. But I just do. I want to thank both of you and thank you for your continued efforts and all that, because I think we're headed in the right direction. Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Persis?
Thank you. Yes, I want to echo what Jamie just said. We're very proud of both of you, and we were bragging. Jamie, we were both at the Central Florida Coalition meeting yesterday, and I think this topic came up in a roundabout way, but Jamie told everyone that if they want to be informed, they can watch this today. So we are ahead of the curve, thanks to the two of you, and we are very excited about that. As I look at the presentation, and I was looking at the second slide there and about Common Core and how it all began, and, you know, I always thought Common Core got a bad deal through all of this. That was also not just a couple of people in a room putting it together, involved teachers from across the country, it included every single governor, included the top educational leaders, and to me, the whole concept of the whole nation having similar goals certainly made a lot of sense. And then, unfortunately, it became political, and it was deemed to be a Democrat curriculum, and people on the other side didn't like it. So Common Core became the absolute enemy, and that's why public education is so bad, because we have these Democrat influence standards called Common Core. So we get rid of that in Florida, and we call it Florida standards. And so we change Common Core, not a whole lot, and just call them Florida standards. Now the governor says we're going to have the best standards, and they're going to be just Florida standards. So that, to me, that's kind of odd, too. What are we? An island? I mean, we are a part of the United States, and I just take issue with some of that. On number three, if you look at slide three, the first line in slide three where it says success criteria for students, and it says to make Florida standards number one in the nation. You know, to me, and this is the whole point, if we should be making Florida students number one in the nation, Florida's students' achievement number one in the nation, you know, Florida's success in college or other areas, not number one in the nation. So it's not about the standards so much. It's about student achievement, and it's about the teachers understanding what it is that we're expecting of them, and it's what parents understand, that what is necessary. And so that we just make this clear and we make this simple, rather than trying to be so concerned about getting credit for it. And I think that's what it kind of bothers me a little bit. The second thing I wanted to bring up was I don't see yet, and of course I know it's early in all of this, but I've been always concerned that we aren't doing enough in kindergarten, first grade, and second grade. And then we test them in third grade, and then we all get excited because the kids didn't do well as we had hoped that they were going to do. So I just hope in all of this that we just don't make the same mistakes that we've made for the last 20 years, and that is don't pay particular attention to what's going on in kindergarten, first and second grade, and then start getting concerned in third grade, and then try to remediate, and I just hope there's a lot more money pushed down to help kindergarten teachers and first grade teachers and second grade teachers, and if that means putting more adults in the classroom, paras, to help those children, because we're just spinning the wheel again and wasting a lot of money if we think that just because we have new standards and new books that everything is going to be right. It's not going to happen. I've been doing this for 45 years. I've seen so many standards I can't even count them on both hands. So it's about the people in the classrooms understanding what's expected of them, giving them the instructional materials that they need and understand how to use, and then putting enough money and help in those classrooms to help those children who come to kindergarten with such a broad range of backgrounds that to expect one human being to bridge the gap between all of those children from the various backgrounds from which they come, it's an impossible task. And so we have to understand that we have to invest early on, from VPK, well, it starts when they're born, but from the time we get them, from VPK on, we got to invest the money there so that when they get to third grade and fourth and fifth, they'll have the foundation, and the gaps in third grade and fourth grade won't be, from the very bottom to the very top. We got to help children, and we got to help them and help their teachers at an earlier age. I noticed in the math piece, technology wasn't mentioned in any way. Did I miss that, or was that talked about?
Technology is absolutely a advice to use for teaching some of the concepts. It's just not necessarily written in the standards, but it is a strategy that can be used. Absolutely.
Great. I had to laugh about the cursive writing. I was a third grade teacher, and my handwriting's horrible. But when I was a teacher, I had to teach third grade cursive, and so that was the time my handwriting was the absolute best because I had to teach it. And anytime you teach something, you learn it. And I think it's great that it's coming back. Some people I know push back on that, but there's not going to be any assessment on that. Is there like a state assessment on cursive handwriting?
No,
I hope not, because I couldn't imagine how they would do that anyway, but that doesn't mean that they wouldn't try. Let's see if I
Mr.
had any
Persis,
evidence.
Yes, in terms of your K-1-2 question, one of the things that I thought about is that we did pay very careful attention to our both vertical and horizontal alignment, and really thought about how the standards would progress from K to 12 for every single standard that we wrote. So
right.
I think that is a factor to consider.
Yeah, and again, it's not going to be that the standards aren't good. Don't get me wrong. The standards could be great. The other standards were probably good, and many other standards have been great. It's just that it's not about the standards so much unless we give the help to the teachers and the teachers know what is expected of them with the support, with everybody understanding, without being all stressed out about it. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's the training. Here's what you need. Answer their questions. Bring everybody on board, and with the superintendent and Carmen, I know, that we can make this work. I just think we have to learn from our past mistakes. That's all I'm saying, and not put too much on the teachers. And I'm a little. It's always a little squirrely when we transition from one to the other, and the teachers. This is going to add to their kind of stress here. So we have to understand where they're coming from. We're using the same materials next year that we're using this year, but I'm assuming they're going to hear eventually about these new standards, and then they're going to have questions about how will they be held accountable for their students' performance on the new standards. Will there be enough time for them? Will they have enough time for the training? Just like you all said about putting the money into the training and making sure that we don't put the cart before the horse, if I'm being clear. Mm-hmm. I hope so. I just think we have some time, it sounds like, and I know we'll do our best to do it right. I just hope that we don't go too fast and push it out nice and so everybody understands it.
So, Mr. Persis, I'll address that quickly. I want the board to understand here today that the teaching and learning division, that will be a priority for us. We understand that this could become a very cumbersome process if you don't have a clear plan that's laid out. And I want to assure the board here today that we will be very proactive with the information that we're receiving, making sure that our teachers are updated, and we will have a rollout that will be seamless. If our teachers are not equipped and they don't have the support that they need, then our students will not be number one in the nation. No. And it's my firm belief that it's not the best standards that will do that. It will serve as a roadmap. It's a dedication of everyone in this room that will ensure that our students Absolutely. Are best in the nation. And under my command and working for the superintendent, that will be a priority.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you both again. Again, we're very, very proud of you. It's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else before I chime in? Anybody? Okay. But yes, so it is incumbent on this board, as well as the superintendent and Mr. Miller and Dr. Kerman, to start thinking of this now. We think we have time. We really don't. I think that's what happened before. We thought we had time, and we did not. So the planning starts now, and so we need to find out now. And whatever your plan is, we kind of need now to find out how we're going to fund this so we can make sure that we are able. But some of my questions, and you may want to take quick notes because you may have to ask when you go back to Tallahassee. And we will ask, too, when we go to Tallahassee shortly. I'm glad to hear about cursive writing. Vocabulary is the big kicker. Kids who have a rather large vocabulary do well. But in that, will you provide words where teachers will be able to scale up? Do you know? So if we start, I like to use the example, if we start with little or small, will gigantic, will they be able to scale up in a certain grade where kids that are more advanced will be able to use a more advanced vocabulary?
And definitely the standards address the vocabulary in terms of context clues and different ways to access new words. There is a list specifically of Greek and Latin roots, which we're wanting the kids to learn, that is much more delineated than what we have now. And then I think as we choose our curriculum, that's where we're really going to be looking at specific words.
Okay. Same question, similar to for mathematics. So are we planning on reintroducing multiplication in a simple form?
Yes. I was going to say multiplication never left, but yes, we are going to, you're going to see the fluency. It's going to start with exploration of the patterns, and then we'll go into some procedural, the process, and then the fluency, and there'll be fluency requirements at every grade level.
Thank you. And I'm glad to see that you're not going to look at how a child solved the problem, more so than did the child get the answer correctly.
Right.
Because I'm going to say this. I don't think most people in this room can understand blocks. That just don't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
We've used all kinds of things to teach mathematics. So when you're working with your children, it's almost incumbent to the parent to know what we're using versus saying, no, I know this worked. Let me show you what worked. But then a child is penalized because they don't do what the teacher has instructed versus the way I showed you and the way your teacher showed you gave you the same answer. So I'm glad we're moving away. But this is my last question. So now we just purchased all of these textbooks. Will the state be giving us some type of financial credit for these textbooks? Are we using the same companies where we can send them back their textbooks and they give us credit towards the new ones? I mean, and this is not for you, but just ask, and I'm going to ask, because looking at where we are now, and our district, like many districts, just purchased instructional materials. And we're saying in 2 years, these items will change, good, bad, or ugly. The question is, if we're going to be using the same company, they should be able to give us some type of financial credit for the items we've purchased.
Yeah. I can tell you that's not happening.
Well, I'll say this. I think we have enough muscle as a state to make it happen. I don't think we should allow them off the hook. Well, we need to go to the governor because I just think that is such a major investment. We cannot afford to just walk away from that investment that we have not even used for 2 years. And that is just part of the conversation. So just bring it up. But I will. We'll be pushing it at our level because it's worth having a conversation, and I'm going to have the superintendent have start pushing that because we need to talk about instruction. That takes up a major percentage of our budget. And so we really need to have that conversation. Go ahead, Ms. Cuthbert.
And to piggyback on what she asked, the last time when the FSA was phased in and the FCAT was phased out, Florida didn't have textbooks for quite a few years. Because they were FCAT textbooks and procedures, and teachers were not allowed to use them. So we went through quite a few years when we had to find other materials, mm-hmm. and it was horrendous in this district. We've just finally come out of that. So will textbooks with the new best standards be available for when we do go live in 2022-23?
That is my understanding, Ms. Cuthbert,
okay.
That it will be available.
So we don't want to go into that debacle like we had 4 years ago.
Right, and that's what I kind of gathered. That is why I'm asking. And we probably will have to do that, and we may have to get other groups. But I do think if we're going to use Pearson or some of the other textbook companies, they have the capability of taking those textbooks and using them in other districts or other states that use Common Core, that we should be able to, as a state, get some refund. And my last question, so if I heard you correctly, we will not be using the ACT or the SAT. If a student takes that, there's no baseline score that they must meet in order to meet graduation requirements.
That is correct. They will be taking the exam, but there will not be a particular score required for graduation, just taking either the SAT or the ACT.
And so if a student, for some reason, is not passing a certain part of, be it ELA or mathematics, then what will be their other way of achieving credits to graduate?
It'll still have a concordance score. It'll still have a concordance score component.
Okay.
For that. It just won't be used for the accountability for the school grade.
Oh, okay. Okay. That was my concern.
Okay, and then to piggyback on what Mrs. Wright said, who's going to pay for those tests? But typically, we as a district pay for the ACT and the SAT, but we don't pay for the FSA exams, correct?
Correct.
So all of a sudden, is that testing burden going to be on our shoulders instead of the state? That too is a good question.
I took notes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your qualifications. You were not picked just because you're so gorgeous, but also because you're very bright, you're experienced, you're qualified. So not only do we thank you for your service, but so very appropriately, Mrs. Haynes brought up, but also I thank you for your credentials and your experience that got you to this spot. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Can I say one thing?
I'm going to close out, then I'll turn it up to you. So, but I do have one last question. So when, as you, the two of you sat on this committee, do you feel confident that what you're introducing and we will be rolling out in the next 2 years will be really beneficial?
Absolutely. I think the clarity that we're going to see in the benchmarks, along with the clarifications in the glossary, is going to make a world of difference.
Okay.
I'm a classroom teacher, so I lived through implementing the Common Core standards, and then we renamed them to the Florida standards, but it has been a challenge as a classroom teacher, and teachers are still struggling with knowing exactly what they're teaching after years, and I would put myself in that boat. So I wouldn't say that I mean, it's been a challenge. So I think I'm very confident of these new standards. I think they're amazing, and I'm, as I said at the beginning, I'm very excited to implement them and to share them with my colleagues.
Thank you. Thank you for your time serving, but thank you for your input, because I think that's important that the two of you agree that the direction we're moving in is beneficial for you and your colleagues. Superintendent Fritz?
I just echo that. Robin and Sandra, thank you very much for your dedication. You know, Robin deals with little children every day in her classroom and somehow found time to do this, as well as trains many of our own educators. And so, Sandra, thank you very much. I'm excited about these standards in some respect, because I have to tell you, and Mr. Persis, I do understand what you're saying. It really is about the adults in the room that make it happen for kids. But there is a common sense approach to these standards, I think, that our citizens, our constituents have been begging for. And so I appreciate some of the back to basics that we're getting to. And as we go forward, there will be challenges. One of the challenges I want to point out to you, and if maybe we can go to slide 9, I think it's 9. When we go to the ELA standards, here's one that we're going to have to deal with. When you start to get to adopting our materials, our ELA materials in 2021, and then look at 21-22, we will have new materials, we will still be using the 312 current standards, so for that assessment piece. So that overlap, it's not uncommon. We experienced this last time, but that's where districts have to make an informed decision, because you can't ask teachers to use new materials but still to test students on the old materials. So there has to be, as Dr. Bogman said, an approach by the district. It has to be thought out. It has to be one where we really utilize those materials and those adoptions. One of the things, you know, I would tell you, the advantage of getting those materials early in 2021, the advantage is our teachers learn how to use those materials when that assessment goes into full effect. And so I wouldn't recommend not adopting. I would recommend adopting at that point in time, because it gives us an extra year to really get our hands wrapped around it. The whole idea about taking our materials and adjusting our scope and sequence, our unit plans, is something we should be doing anyway every single solitary year. Dr. B and her team have coordinated an effort to bring down our high-impact teachers to look at our unit plans right now and the materials that we're using in the spring. Because every year that should be a common practice for us. Because there are teachers that are knocking it out of the park, and they may be doing things differently than what we think they should be doing. So I just want to say that this is very exciting. Robin and Sandra, we're going to count on your leadership and in your involvement. And Dr. B, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Moving. So we're moving on to item 3.01, district strategic plan. But what we're going to do is take a 5-minute break, give them a chance to set up, and if we need to do anything quickly, we can. Ready yet, Jamie? Thank you. We're going to reconvene our meeting. Moving on to item 3.01, Superintendent Fritz.
Board members, this is a very exciting work session. This is why you hired me. I'm super excited, because one of the things that we talked about last week were my goals for now until August. And the board had given me the task of creating a strategic plan that really moves our district forward. And so we have partnered with Delivery Ed, and that's Ms. Corey Gordon and Ms. Julia Linfors, and very excited because we're going to have a very active participation today. We've already started a lot of the work. We've been meeting with focus groups since December. Corey and Julia have been meeting with our folks here at the district office last week. She's had her phone calls with each of you. And so today we're going to go through some of the data, and I'm going to share with you, just like any time you look at data,
and where you're at and where you want to go, you're going to see some baseline data, and you're going to see some things, some comments that really expose, like, I kind of equate it to an autopsy, right? We're going to look for those areas that we need to improve. And so as Julia and Corey go through some of this today, you're going to see some things maybe that are disturbing. And I certainly understand that. But understand, that's why we did it, so that we know where we got to go with this three-year strategic plan. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Corey Gordon.
Awesome. Good morning. Good morning, board members. Morning. It's wonderful to be here with all of you. It's really a privilege anytime we do this work to start the work, because this is where the excitement is and the opportunity and the hope, and there's so much of that in this district right now, despite some of the challenges that you all have been facing in the past couple of years. So what we're going to do today is a little bit of listening at first, some time for questions, but then we really do want to reserve a good chunk of time to get some ideas from all of you. So if there are questions that we want to talk about offline, we might say, we'll talk more about that, but don't be offended by that. That's really an opportunity. We want to use this time wisely and get your ideas. So that's what we're hoping to be able to do. So let's talk about our objectives for the next 2 hours, roughly. So we're going to talk a little bit about our overall approach and how we're thinking about strategic planning and how it's maybe different than strategic planning processes you might have been part of in the past. Then we'll talk about and share, as Dr. Fritz said, the results of some of the stakeholder conversations that we've been having and the leadership team self-assessment that we facilitated on Friday. Then we'll talk through and, like I said, spend the biggest chunk of our time, hopefully, thinking about mission, vision, and core values that will guide our work in development of the strategic plan. And so we really want to get your ideas about phrases, concepts, things that are important to you and what you think represent the district and where we want to go, so that we can use that information to inform the work we do in the next days and weeks as we build this plan out together. And then we'll talk, of course, about next steps and where we go from here. So that's what we're hoping to accomplish. I'd like to start with a quick overview of the way we think about strategic planning. And so the name of our company, DeliverEd, is really focused on this idea of delivering results for students. So our big theory is that there's lots of really talented folks in education. We just heard from two of them. And really good ideas, like standards. But the question is not whether we know what to do, it's how we do it. And that so much of what this work entails is thinking carefully about the rollout, like you talked about, Mr. Persis, and thinking through the how of all of these things we're trying to do in a school district, in a classroom, in a state education agency. And so our organization builds the capacity of leaders like Dr. Fritz and his team to take the ideas they've already got and make sure that they reach students in classrooms across the county. So our theory is that so much of our time right now is spent, 90% maybe of our time is spent thinking up new ideas, and we reserve only about 10% of our time to think about implementation, and we don't see much success that way. So we propose really flipping that and saying, let's make sure we got the right ideas, but really we know a lot about what works in education. It's about the quality of the teachers in front of the students. It's about the rigor of the standards that they're being taught with. It's about the use of data to inform instruction. We know all of that. So we need to spend most of our time thinking about implementation. How are we going to fund it, as Ms. Wright talked about earlier? How are we going to ensure that teachers have the capacity to actually do what we're asking them to do? And so that's when we see greater success. I think it's important to realize, too, that sometimes our instincts are we just need something different. We need something new and shiny and innovative. And certainly innovation is important, and we want to be thinking about how to move the needle. But actually, successful delivery depends on two things: the boldness of the ideas, but also the quality of the execution, right? So if you think about where we are right now, if we sort of don't have bold ideas and we don't execute them well, we'll just stay at the status quo. If we have bold ideas and we don't execute well, that's when we get controversy without impact, right? Has anybody ever been there? And that quadrant's not a nice place to live, right? So what we really want to think about is how do we execute well, whether the ideas are not that bold, not that exciting, we'll still get improved outcomes, or if we're trying to aim for transformation, that's when we've got to really push the needle. And so our push is going to be to the team as we work through the coming months to ensure that we're living on the right-hand side of this quad, of this two-by-two, right? Really thinking about the quality of the execution, no matter whether the idea is about improving things we're already doing or about coming up with new ideas. The challenge with this, of course, is that implementation is really hard work. It's actually really fun to dream up the ideas, right, like the people in Tallahassee are doing right now. It's how you make them happen that's really where the rubber meets the road. And the truth is that there's often a dip when you move something new, when you implement something new. People are really excited at first, and then they start doing it, and they realize, this is harder than I thought. And that's where you get that implementation dip. But what we're going to push for in the strategic plan is to push through that. And one of the things we heard from your stakeholders is, no more change. We can't handle any more change, right? Pick something, stick with it, follow through. And so we need to make that commitment to people that we're really going to stick with it and stick through the hard times. The challenge, though, of course, is that many of us went to school to learn lots of different things, but very few people actually go to school to learn how to implement. And so that's where DeliverEd exists, is in the idea that we believe implementation is a science that can be taught and learned and can have tools to support it, and that's what we really spend our time thinking about. So the tools we use, or the toolkit we use, is a toolkit called Delivery, which is a cousin if you're familiar with implementation science or continuous improvement. It's in that realm, in that vein, and it's familiar to us as educators. It's about asking four seemingly simple questions, and this is what we're going to do in the strategic plan. What are we trying to do, really specifically? Not just we're trying to teach kids, but how much are we expecting them to learn, and when or by when, and how much do we expect these numbers to move? How are we planning to do it? What are the priorities that we're really going to focus on that we believe will help us get there? At any given moment, how are we going to know whether or not we're on track? So how are we going to monitor progress over time and not just wait till 3 years from now and say, did we do it? And then if we're not on track, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to set up regular problem-solving conversations and progress monitoring conversations? Because we know that the minute we write the plan, it'll be out of date. Something won't go according to plan. So we've got to have systems for regularly talking about it and adjusting course. That's what we're going to spend the next several months working with the team to build. I'm going to actually skip this page. And that's important because I think for you all, as you think about the role that you play as a board, the superintendent I know has committed to ensuring that he shares regularly with you all how progress against the strategic plan is going. And so this is an example. You may have heard of stock takes. I think some of you may have visited some. This is an example of what those routines or those progress monitoring conversations can look like. In this district, they had six goals or six themes, and they rotate through each of those with regular updates to the superintendent, bringing the data to the superintendent, anecdotal evidence from the field, understanding how things are going, and share out and have those problem-solving conversations regularly, and then those inform regular updates to the board. So this is not your calendar. This is an example of what that will look like, but one of the things we'll be doing is building a calendar like this for you all so you know when to expect those regular updates on progress. So that's the real overview of how this process in the strategic plan is going to work and how we're going to build it and how we hope it's different than maybe strategic planning processes you might have been part of where you write a really beautiful plan and then it sits on the shelf. We're really trying to make it a living, breathing document that's going to guide the work of the district and that everybody is aligned around. So how far are we from that now? So that was really the purpose. We were here last week, and as Superintendent said, we've been speaking with lots of you. We did a survey. We got more than 4,000 results from across the district. And so all of that was really to say, where are we starting from? Because, of course, we know there are lots of wonderful things happening in this district, too, and we want to build on those. We want to leverage those in this next strategic plan, and we want to fill the gaps. We want to find out where are those opportunities for growth. So to do that, we needed to kind of do that autopsy and say, where are we starting from? What are our strengths, and what are our challenges across the district? So I'm going to share that with you. I will say this is an important moment because it's an opportunity for the district to be really transparent and honest about where we are. And so our goal was to say at this moment in time, right, given a snapshot in time, where are we and where are our strengths and challenges? And so we're going to share that with you, and I'm going to save some time. So if you have questions, I ask that you just jot them down, and we will save some time at the end for a couple of questions. But this is the current perception of where we are. So how do we gather this? So as I said, actually this number has gone up since I made this slide. We've gotten over 1,400 responses to a survey that we sent out to ask staff about their perspective on strengths and opportunities. And we leveraged opportunities to interview and focus group with the superintendent's focus groups that he's been conducting, as well as more than 10 groups that we spoke with last week when we were here. So there's a wide breadth of input that's been put into these results that you're about to see. The results are framed around those four questions, but those four questions translated into a 15-element framework that we have seen over time. Any effective organization, whether it's an SEA, a district, a school even, has to be able to do to implement well. So I'm going to share a little bit about what each of these areas are as we go through, but just know that we have a rubric. There's a whole process for how we arrived at this, but this is the framework that tells us whether or not a district is well-positioned to actually deliver on its goals for students. So this first category is about the foundation. Is the foundation there for delivery? And what you'll see is for each of these areas, we've rated on a 4-point scale. We use 4 because if you use 3, people just pick the middle. And the scale goes from red, which means it's an area of challenge or urgent need, to green, which means it's an area of relative strength. And then the two areas in between are orange and yellow, or amber red and amber green, which means either approaching green or approaching red. So what does the foundation require? The first question is, does our system, our district, actually have a clearly articulated and shared aspiration? That first question, what are we trying to do? And the answer here, I'm going to move my webcam because it's hard for me to read on that side. The answer here is that this is an area we need to focus on, and this is why we need to build the strategic plan. Right now, of course, everyone is committed to students. That is clear. That was one of the things we heard most. There is massive commitment in this district to your students. This is why people are showing up every day. But that is not a clear enough aspiration, right? What exactly is it that we're trying to accomplish for those students? How do we measure that? How do we translate that into goals that can really be measured and monitored in concrete terms? And that's why this is in the red, right? That's why right now, at this moment in time, there's an eagerness for that kind of direction. 1B is about, does our district regularly review our capacity and deliberately think about whether we're well-positioned to do this? This is an area right now, because we're doing this process, that is green. This is a strength. The district is clearly interested and recognizes the need for reflection, right? The superintendent has done this, has been doing these focus groups. The staff is going out and listening, trying to understand how far we are from where we want to be. And we know that this is a pattern we want to continue, right? The superintendent is doing these focus groups now. This will not be the last time that the staff will get a chance to have input, and that's really important. But in general, this is an important area to highlight that the district is focused on and doing quite well right now. The third category around this idea of a delivery unit is whether there's a team or group of people who are thinking about implementation. So our experience has been it's easy to say, well, implementation is everybody's job. But the challenge then becomes, if it's everybody's job, it's really no one's job. And so in our approach, we really advocate to leaders, and the superintendent actually played this role in Osceola, that they build what we call a delivery unit, which is a person or group of people who are really focused on implementation. And so the superintendent has brought on Dr. Val Gobin to play that role. And while we haven't quite launched it yet, because we're just getting started, there's an intent to do it. There's a clear focus on the need for this in the district. And there's been a person hired to really make that happen. And so we're really feeling optimistic about this area. So that's why you see an amber green or a yellow in this area. And then finally, a guiding coalition is another important part of the foundation. This is where all of you might find yourselves, right? This is the question, does the superintendent have a group of key people who are championing the aspiration of the district? That when the things get hard, when the going gets tough, he can call to be advocates on behalf of the district. And I know that he's been really focused on building that with all of you, with other stakeholders, with union members, right? Thinking about who are we going to get to really help champion this aspiration. So again, this is another relative area of strength. It's going to get harder as the going gets harder, right? And that implementation dip happens. So we need to think about continuing to work on this area. But in general, this is something the superintendent has been quite focused on. So that's the foundation. The second bucket here is about data use. So 2A and 2B are about how well do we understand the delivery challenge? How well do we understand where we are and why we're here? So 2A is about, do we use data to evaluate performance? And you'll see this is an area that's not quite in the green yet. And the reason is not that we don't have data or that there aren't places where it's being used. There are. But it's not consistently being done across the district in a systematic way just yet. There's a sense you see here that a lot of decisions are driven by data. More data decisions are data driven by sentiment, I should say, and relationships rather than data. There is a lot of data, but it's unclear which data is most critical or how often we should be looking at it and how we should be using it to make decisions. So we haven't quite gotten here yet. We know we need to, though, and that's why this is marked as an area of focus. Similarly, 2B, do we understand the drivers of performance? Do we understand why? So when we look at our data and we see, for example, this was a good example we talked about last week, that there's a dip in achievement in that transition to middle school and that transition to high school. Do we know why? Have we investigated the bright spots, the places where people are really beating the odds, and use that to inform our district-wide strategy? And the answer there is not yet, right? If we'd been doing that, we might be seeing some of those areas tick up in the right direction. So we've got new things that we're trying, but it's not really tied to the root causes. We don't fully understand the root causes yet, and we don't really know what's working and what's not enough to inform our strategy. So these are two areas that we're really going to focus on in the coming weeks as we think about building out our strategic plan, is not just choosing things based on what we think might work, but really trying to go to the field and understand where are we, why is it happening this way, and how do we use that to choose the right things to do next. So that's the second bucket. The third bucket is the plan, and I think you won't be surprised that this area is quite red, and that's why we're here, because we don't really have a plan yet. Right? We've got ideas, we've got plans in some silos, but we don't have a cohesive written plan that's driving our work as a district. And so what are the components of that plan? The first would be that strategy. Have we prioritized a cohesive set of strategies that will maximize impact on our aspiration? And the answer right now is not yet. So everything feels like a priority. Right? This is something we heard over and over again from the field. We suffer from, I like this quote, we suffer from whiplash. We're sort of chasing the next big thing, but we don't really seem to follow through on anything. So people are really yearning for that kind of clear set of focused, narrow priorities. And I remember in one of my conversations with one of you, I remember someone saying, we've got to be willing to choose to focus on some things, which means choosing not to focus on others, which is one of the hardest things to do in education. But the reality is we can't do everything well. We can't. So we've got to pick the things that are really going to give us the biggest bang for our buck and maximize impact on that aspiration, which is why that aspiration is red, because we've got to get it clear so that we can then think about our strategy. 3B is also an area of focus. Do we understand the chain through which implementation must occur? So when we select those strategies, do we think about all the impacts that are going to happen all the way down the chain from where we sit right here in this boardroom to all the classrooms and students across this district? And that's a hard exercise, and it requires really thinking through what needs to happen step by step, what capacities need to be built. That's a hard thing to do. Very few districts do it well, but our hope is that in the strategic planning process, we're going to build those skills and those muscles to be able to think like that. So I think there's some examples right now of where implementation hasn't quite been thought through in the way it should have been. And then finally, do we have goals and targets with numbers that we're driving toward? Because they're not really a clear set of goals yet, it would be hard to have targets, and so this is not surprisingly an area of challenge. But this idea of the A rating being the target is a good start, right? This idea of we're on our way to an A is a good start in terms of what it means, but we've got to make sure people are really clear on how that impacts them and what that target looks like for them. So that's the planning bucket. But then it doesn't stop there. Sometimes we're tempted to think when we write a strategic plan, we've just got to do all that. You've actually got to be able to drive the delivery of that plan. So that's what the fourth bucket is all about. So the first piece here is, do we actually have a set of routines to monitor performance? Are there regular results-driven conversations that review performance and allow for action on performance? And here, this is one of the things we heard. Accountability is a real challenge because expectations aren't clear and people aren't necessarily held to meeting them. And so there are some bright spots in departments where this is being done, but again, consistently across the district, we need more focus on this area. As a result, it's hard to solve problems early and rigorously. It feels often like we're in a whack-a-mole situation. I thought that was a really good example. And the reality of education is that there's always going to be some moles, right? But can we get strategic so that the number of moles popping up is a little bit less, right? So that we can preempt some of those whack-a-mole situations and be a bit more proactive. Right now, we don't have the systems to do that. And so it ends up feeling like everything is urgent and there's a lot of challenges happening. I think the bright side of this is that there's fantastic people in this district who rise to the challenge, right? They've been whacking a mole for a long time, and they're still here. And so we've got to take advantage of that and leverage those people to be able to be more strategic with our problem solving so that we can at least get ahead of the game a little bit, right? There's always going to be those last-minute urgent things, but can we get a little bit more ahead of it? And then finally, a real area of strength, and we actually, the district assessed, when we did the self-assessment with the leadership team on Friday, they were harder on themselves than we were. We actually think this is an area of strength. Are we building momentum and sustaining momentum? The truth is, you guys have had a lot of change in this district, right? We've been through a lot, and people are feeling that. They really are. But they're still showing up. They're still doing the best they can do. There's still a lot of hope happening across this district, and that is something to be celebrated, and that's an opportunity, we kept telling Dr. Fritz, to seize the moment. The moment is here, and we are primed to make it happen. People are eager. People are excited. And we've got to deliver, right? Now we've got to really deliver on that. But people want to be part of the change that's been promised. We heard some really powerful quotes that I'll share from the survey about that. People saying, this is the first time in 20 years I have hope that we might actually do something differently. Don't let me down, they kept saying. Don't let me down. So no pressure. No pressure. And then the last bucket is about culture. How do we create a culture that supports this kind of thinking and this kind of focus on implementation? So these are three areas that we think are really critical to having a successful culture focused on implementation. The first is building capacity. Are we thinking about building capacity strategically all the time? This one's a relative strength for you all right now. There's a lot of structures in place to build capacity across the district, and there's been a lot of thinking lately about the reorg, about people in key positions to make sure we have the right people on the bus, right? There's still some challenges, though, with finding good candidates, recruiting people, keeping people. So this isn't quite green, but we've made some progress in this area. Communication, another area that's quite hard to get to green. Communication is quite challenging. Ask Kelly over there. But it's an area that the district has also been focused on. Do we communicate about the aspiration and what we're doing here? There's been a lot of improvement in this area. There's a new director on board to make this happen, but there's still challenges with clear and consistent messaging across the district. So that's why we wanted to call attention to this area. And then finally, and this language comes from our British roots, are we unleashing the alchemy of relationships? This idea that relationships are critical to making this work happen, right? This doesn't happen except through people. And so are we cultivating those relationships and sustaining and maintaining them? And the truth is here, there's an us versus them mentality that has emerged in the district between sort of people that sit at the district and the staff on the ground. And I think folks are really committed to building and repairing that, but we haven't made that progress yet. People are still a little nervous about that, and there's a little bit of mistrust. And so there's a tipping point moment here where we've got to sort of listen to the field, as Dr. Fritz has been doing, and make sure that our plan is responsive to them and doesn't feel like just another thing that got baked in the district office without their input, right? So that's why we called attention to this by giving it a red as well. And so the whole picture, when you put it all together, looks like this, which is why we use this 15-element framework. It gives you a heat map of where to focus, right? Of where to pay attention. And what you'll see here is we've got a lot of the pieces of the foundation. We're working to build a lot of them. We've got to work on defining that aspiration more clearly, but we've got a strong foundation. We're going to use data and we're going to build a plan so that we can actually get to the driving and irreversibility side of things. We're not there yet, but we've got momentum. We've got a moment in time that is really critical for us to build upon and to utilize and to really drive our work for the coming years. And so what we wanted to say here is, if you think about this map right now, and the capacity review that we did is something we do really thinking about this moment in time, if we came back 6 months from now and did the same thing, our hope and our projection is that the map would actually look more like this. Not everything is going to get to green. I won't promise you that. But the things that are going to focus on in this plan, right, this area of defining our aspiration, building our reform strategy, using data, we're going to get better at that. That is what we are going to focus on intentionally through the next couple of months. We're still likely to have some problem-solving challenges, right? That's going to take some time, and the relationship piece is also going to take some time to repair. So those might still be red. But we hope and we think and we believe strongly that with these systems in place, this plan built together, we will get a lot of these areas shifting and moving in the right direction. A couple more things I wanted to call out before I open it up for questions. So in addition to those 15 elements, it's important to call out some other strengths that were highlighted by these conversations. And I put some quotes in here that I think are really powerful that you can certainly read or read on your own time. The biggest strength that came out in I think every conversation I had, actually, was that our staff is dedicated, hardworking, and caring, and committed to students, which is not a given, certainly not a given, and a real asset for you all to leverage as you think about moving forward. Hardworking teachers, awesome administrators, people who really work hard to support them or those around them. There's a robust list of offerings and options people really appreciate, from the academies to the CTE courses. People want more, of course. They always want more. But there's lots of opportunities for different types of learning. District-wide staff are committed to getting outcomes for kids, so we want to become the district that other districts want to be like, right? I liked that. A place where people will want to work and send their kids to school, and that the people are in it for the kids, that student-focused mindset. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the hope and the optimism that exists for this moment in time. Full steam ahead. Superintendent has come on board and made some really good changes, and people are excited about that, and they're really hoping that those things continue. They're hoping to continue to see progress, and they think they're eager to see that progress, which is really exciting and encouraging. Some of the other challenges that some of these are overlapping with the 15 elements, but I think important. This us versus them piece we talked about. Discipline came out a number of times in the survey. Not surprisingly, I'm sure you hear that from your constituents as well. So we know that needs to be a focus in the plan. On the academic side, curriculum is a concern. I'm encouraged by the conversation we just had, that there's an opportunity to really focus and double down on getting that right. And then the achievement of some of the subgroups, right? Students with disabilities, ESE students, low-income students, and students of color. How are we really going to accelerate their learning in a way that closes some of those gaps? And then finally, the areas of systems and processes. How do we make sure we have policies and procedures? And I know many of you raised this to me in your conversations as well. How do we make sure our talent management is best in class? And then how do we build on that communication and some of the work we've been doing in that area and get even better at it? So again, some overlap with the 15 elements, but a different view, a different lens. And so what we did was we shared all of this with the staff, and then we gave some ideas, some recommendations about where we think the district should go. And these are not meant to be us saying this is what you have to put in your plan. Tomorrow we're going to start the conversation with staff about what should go in the plan. But these are ideas that emerge. And so what you'll see here is we definitely need a focus on high-quality instruction for all students, and we need to really make sure we mean all. That's a really important point that was elevated time and again. And things that might come up in there would be things around curriculum, things around strategies for teachers, things around assessment alignment and PLCs, differentiated support for some of our struggling students, and then maybe expansion of some of those academic options. Now, again, these are ideas, right? This is not necessarily what's going to end up in the plan. These were ideas that we generated based on these conversations that the team is going to wrestle with, prioritize, think through, add to, delete, etc. Another area that we encourage the team to think about focusing on is on that staff piece. How do we make sure we're recruiting, attracting diverse, high-quality staff, and retaining those staff, right? Onboarding them systematically, strengthening those mechanisms for feedback and accountability, developing staff through impactful coaching and PD, and succession planning is another big area we heard people eager for folks to think about. Operational systems and processes, you heard about this one, making sure that our delivery chains are clear across our departments, who's doing what and how, that we've got non-negotiables in key areas. So this was another big piece, that question of autonomy, what's left up to schools versus what's led by the district, and obviously wanting school leaders to have the authority to run their buildings, but there's a desire for a little bit more direction around certain areas from the district. So what are those non-negotiables that are really going to help school leaders know which direction to head in? Communications and then standard operating procedures around specific things like maintenance requests and other operational areas. Communications and relationship gathering input and feedback, building relationships, protocols for external communication that I know Kelly's already been focused on, and then strategic partnerships with community organizations. Another thing we heard was you've got a lot of great community partners out there. Let's leverage them even more. Let's think about ways to help them get more engaged and involved with the school. And then finally, strategic investment of our resources. How we align our budget to these priorities once we have them. Think about opportunities for cost savings, where we can find them. And then equitable allocation of resources to support that true all-means-all mentality. Again, things to think about, ideas that were generated through this conversation. So I know that's a lot of information, and I imagine you have questions or thoughts or reactions. I'm going to ask that we spend, it's 11:40, I'm going to ask that we spend about 10 or 15 minutes in discussion about this before we jump into the next part. So let me go back to this piece here. And just ask if there are any questions, clarifying questions we'll start with, clarifying questions about what you heard.
Would you like to start? Well, I just want to thank you guys for that very, very quick, lots of information all at once. Honestly, I'm not surprised by this. This is about where I thought we were. And so I think we have an opportunity, as you stated, I think that the biggest all of these aspects are important. However, what we do with that momentum is what really counts right now.
Yeah.
And I like the slide where you had the change dip.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've said to plenty of folks, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes and it's going to feel worse before it gets better. And so I think that's consistent with this. So, again, thank you. And I think you've summed up a lot of the frustrations that I've at least brought up in the past. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Ms. Haynes, Ms. Cuthbert.
You've put everything in very professional terms. And it's objective. It's well diverse. And it just, and in very small bits of language, you were able to nail a lot of what's actually happening. And before we build, we have to dig a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And this digging is going to uncover rocks, gravel, maybe some seepage, hopefully no swamp, but anywhere that we can build up. And we cannot improve unless we discover what our weaknesses are.
Absolutely.
So I think this is very accurate. It's very interesting, but we have to face this in order to correct it. So
Thank you for saying that, Ms. Cuthbert. I would say, too, I would just give a lot of credit to the superintendent and his leadership team. You know, we just met them last week, and they opened up to us and let us in and let us see what's, you know, what the sort of good and bad and ugly, and they were really honest. I mean, one of the things we do is we do all these focus groups, and then we do this self-assessment, and it's always interesting to see, is the self-assessment, are people aware, right? Is there self-awareness about where those strengths and challenges are, or are we going to have to deliver a really hard message that your field doesn't feel the same way you do? And that was not the case. People were, you know, the district here is very aware of these challenges, and very self-reflective, and that, to your point, is what we have to build on. We have to be willing to sort of look ourselves in the mirror and find those strong things, because there are some really strong pieces in this district to build on, and then figure out where those gaps are.
I think a lot of it also has to deal with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
We as a district have done many, many good things.
Mm-hmm.
Good programs. Not all the programs, even though there have been quite a few, not all of them were unsuccessful.
Of course not.
But because of state and federal government complaints, news media, lack of funding, social media, complaints from parents,
sure.
Communities, the business, businesses say we're not doing enough for CTE programs to develop our students. And I think a lot of the attacks makes us feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw one quote in the focus group was that we become more reactive rather than proactive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is the direction you are getting us to. We have been too much reactive.
Yeah.
We need to be proactive.
Right.
A lot of some of it is criticism that is desperately needed.
Right.
It's constructive criticism as well as awakening criticism. But it's being handled in such a professional manner, there's a lot of butter on the toast. So thank you so much.
Well, and I think to that point about proactive versus reactive, it's hard if you don't have a common vision and a common direction. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be proactive because you don't know that you're rowing in the same direction. So building that piece is going to be so critical to being able to sort of stop that cycle in its tracks.
Ms. Haynes?
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you. I know that, you know, even when I did my interview with you, you made it very easy to answer the questions and to collect the data. Looking through, because we've received some of the focus group data and looking through it, I know that right now this is in some ways a difficult time for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Last May and June, we as a board faced a difficult time ourselves in making a decision to make changes. Right. And change is hard.
Yes.
And some people adapt to change. Some people, you know, they just feel like they can't. And the one thing that I would say is I appreciate everyone out there that has participated in the interview. The fact that you have over 1,400, you know, that's a great number. I wasn't sure we'd, you know, get that many to start with.
Yep.
But, you know, my message today, and I think from all of us to some degree, is we're all living in the change right now. And moving forward, it really is a decision on our shoulders. If we embrace this and we work through it, and there's going to be that dip, mm-hmm. but we stand together as a district, and I mean every person in the district, mm-hmm. to move forward, we'll come out on the other side, and it's going to be what's best for our students. So right now the challenge is that every one of us take the positive versus the negative route in this, and I really want to thank both of you ladies for being here, because we didn't know what this would look like, but you have. You very professionally put our issues up here in a way that we can embrace them, and now let's move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Persis?
Thank you, Chairman Wright. I agree with all the comments that my colleagues have made. You know, this is a people business, you know, plain and simple. I mean, you know, we don't make widgets. You know, we
build people.
We hire people, and to your point, to hire people, to develop them, to retain them, you know, that's what we have to do, and we have to do it perhaps better than we've been doing it. But one thing is clear, our superintendent has the energy, he has the optimism, he has the drive, he is all in, he's a no excuses kind of person. And people who are not confident will probably have trouble dealing with him, mm-hmm. because he is so confident and he is so driven. But, you know, that's the way it is. I remember being a principal and, you know, following somebody who perhaps wasn't that way, and then I come in there and, you know, kaboom, 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 and we're going to do this, and I need your help, and these are our goals and them. And some people are just like, man, I can't handle this guy. You know, he's like crazy. He's asking too much of me. I don't understand. Well, then it's time for you to go. You know, I'm sorry. There are, you know, 69 other schools, and maybe another school would be better for you. In this case, maybe there's another district that are better for you. I just want the superintendent to know that, you know, he has my support, and sure, there's going to be pushback, but then that pushback becomes pushed off to the curb, and we just keep going. You know, once you stop being optimistic, you know, you're going to just fold your arms and be a grumpy old person. So I'm not there yet, and I don't want to ever be there. So
yeah.
I get energized being around other positive, energized people.
That's right.
You know, that's what drives us. Mm-hmm. And so, to that end, I like the fact that that was revealed in the survey, mm-hmm. about the optimism here. Mm-hmm. And that we're moving in the right direction. So I'm excited about this process, and I look forward to it.
Good. Thank you.
Can I just
sure
say
you
I
can.
Really like your talk.
Very well, St. Patrick's.
Well, yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, you're a week early, know. But we'll take it.
Let's
like
go. Yeah, I'm ready.
So you're fine. But, yes, thank you. You're actually in my world now, and I'm a big proponent of strategic plans and succession planning. So this is home for me, and this is where we are. We know what we need to do. I'm glad to see that everybody is willing to move forward. And, you know, it's one adjective you got because you said the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's really the good, the bad, the beautiful, and the ugly. Because there are beautiful parts about all
absolutely
of this.
True.
And the beauty is that we know where we are. We know what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And it is up to, it's not just the faculty, staff. It is the board.
Yeah.
We play a major role
absolutely.
In making sure that our strategic plan is not just followed, but they have what they need to be successful. Mm-hmm. And that is our goal. Anything you'd like to add, Superintendent?
Thank you for your commitment. I'll just share that this is a piece of work that we're going to be working on for 3 years. It's not a one-year plan. I think it's really important for everybody in the public to understand that. We will make progress, but to reiterate the point, you know, it's going to take some time to get there. The main thing that we're going to do is we are going to lay out the plan. We're going to work the plan. and we're going to hold ourselves accountable to the plan.
Thank you. Before we move to the next section, we need to take a break, and I need to see all my colleagues in the room for just about 5 minutes. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, no problem. I'm glad we're out.
We'll turn it back over to you.
No problem. Okay, great. So we'd like to actually spend the bulk of our time together today getting your direct input on one of those big red pieces of the heat map that Corey shared, which is that vision, mission, core beliefs, shared base of where we're going together. Oh.
No, I think the microphone, I'm not sure it's, there you go.
Oh, boy. So we'll talk just briefly about what we see and what we're looking for when we start to build what we call the architecture for this basis. So we have the aspiration or vision, and that is that big picture, where are we going? We see the current one out on the wall when we come in, right? We see it across the communication from the district. It's that overarching ambition, the district's answer to the question of what are we trying to do from those four core questions. And then we have goals, of the what, right? A specific, measurable, realistic, time-bound outcome that will move the district closer to its aspirations. So we're looking for, when we set the goals, and we're going to start working on this with the staff workshop tomorrow, we're going to have those clear targets, those metrics, a set time frame for achieving those goals. And then the strategy, that's getting further down that delivery chain, right? So the projects, the programs, the initiatives that will enable the district to achieve its goals. And we share all of this not because we're going to be asking you to set those objectives and goals together today, but because it really is should be in your mind that that's where we're going when we talk about the vision, mission, and the core beliefs. We wanted to share an example of what this can look like. So Osceola, obviously I haven't said it as many times as Corey. Osceola developed an architecture that ties their strategies to specific goals. So they have that mission, that aspiration statement around inspiring all learners to reach their highest potential as responsible, productive citizens. And through those goals that are across the top that are tied to that mission, they then have strategies that roll up to those goals. And this is in your decks. You can kind of review the language in more detail. This is an example of building that thread from that top of the pyramid, the vision, all the way through the goals and the strategies of implementation. Yeah, I'm like, which button? Okay. So from the goals, we also have metrics, right? And we'll be working on this as part of our work with the staff. So, for example, when we talk about maximizing academic success, we want to be really specific, as Corey was sharing earlier. And in this example, we see we have our current baseline high school graduation rate in Osceola of 82% from school year of 2014-15, and we want to push that to 90% by the school year of 2018-19. And then they would have specific strategies that will be tied to that goal and, the metric tied to that goal going forward. So we actually have some handouts for you all that run through this, some examples of vision statements, mission statements, and core beliefs. And we'll use this in our activity together today. But to go to the point of vision statements, we are looking to answer that question of what will our district look like in the future? What do we aspire to see when we talk about on our way to an A, the Volusia way? What does that mean in terms of the vision for the district? And I will say, I'll just pause for a moment and say that when we get into the activity and we want your input on the vision, mission, and core beliefs, we're not going to get to that final vision, mission, and core beliefs today. This is really about having you all have your say and have your voices and the voices of your constituents in the vision and mission and core beliefs that we continue to finalize with the staff over the workshops. Why do we need a vision? Well, we look at the heat map that Corey shared earlier. We really need that shared direction, right? We need that foundation that everyone across the district
from the folks who are in this room and in this building to the paraprofessionals in the classroom. They can look to that, and they know we have that we're on this shared path together. A strong vision statement, we like to see less is more, right? We want it to be clear. Specific language, specific words are used. Easy to remember. Energizing. It should inspire and create meaning for people. And bridging the present and the future, because it is that forward-looking, that vision. When it comes to mission statements, we're trying to answer the question, why does our district exist? This is where we really get into more detail around definition of district values. It helps us keep the organization on track. It's kind of that how-to statement. So we see cause, action, and impacts articulated in strong mission statements. Still, no more than a few sentences, longer than the vision, but still something that people can process easily and digest. It also sets those guardrails, something that Corey referred to earlier in her overview of the capacity review process, focusing on some of our core aspirations means that we aren't going to be able to focus on everything. And so what are those guardrails that we want to set for ourselves as a district? And of course, aligns with the vision. As we were talking about, as folks were talking about in the standards conversation, just having these strong pieces in place alone aren't enough to drive change or even fully define what change is going to look like for Volusia. So we want to decide what we stand for, do work that matters, and bring our team together. A couple of things that we often do when we go through these exercises is using the disagreement test. So if no one would disagree with your statement, then it's probably too generic, right? So think about that specificity of language. And we want to talk about share the current vision and mission. So I mentioned I saw the vision on the wall when I came in this morning, but ensuring all students receive a superior 21st century education, and Volusia County Schools will ignite a passion for learning by providing a challenging, creative curriculum in a safe, supportive environment where students reach their highest potential. I saw a little bit of a quizzical look, and I'm wondering if this mission statement is well known to folks in the room, and that may be part of what we're trying to achieve here through the exercise to bring some new thoughts to it. And then we didn't talk much about core beliefs, but these are kind of the fundamental views of our organization about our work. What do we really care about as a district? And again, we're looking to define our culture, of dictate behavior expectations. You talk about creating that positive culture, alleviating some of that us versus them that we heard time and again in the focus groups and in the survey responses. These also provide some guardrails. They shouldn't be obvious, right? And they should be limited to a few. So it goes back to that of focusing on what's really important for the district over the next 3 years in particular, because that's the time frame that we're working in. So the activity that we'd like to ask you all to engage in today is really around brainstorming of some language, some phrases, things that are really important to you and to your constituents as you think about moving into the vision, mission, and core beliefs for the strategic plan for the next 3 years. So we're going to start by some quiet work time. You have in front of you cards and markers. We have extra markers if you happen to have a dud, so just raise your hand there. And what we ask you to do here is take a look at this document for reference if you need to. It's really the content of the slides that we're talking about, the vision, mission, and core beliefs. It also has some examples of other school districts and how they have articulated some of these things. They're not necessarily all exemplars. For example, the Catalina Foothills District in Arizona has a lot of core shared values. And so that, well, that's great. In some ways, it can also make it really challenging to focus and distill what are our priorities. But nonetheless, you might find some language in here that's instructive, and so we provide that just kind of as a resource. Another resource is on the slide in front of you, and that's what we heard in the capacity review. So this is just pulling out some prompting phrases for you all of things that folks are looking for or already see in some cases. So there's interest in inclusive culture. We talked about an asset-based approach, right, leveraging the strengths of especially of the educators who are here in the district, mutual accountability between administrators and teachers, coherent, cohesive systems for communication, student-centered, student-focused initiatives, educators as professionals, and that goes to the mutual respect piece. So those are really just kind of some prompting thoughts. So we'll spend 10 minutes with you writing down on the cards as you think of words or phrases that you would like to see included. It can be vision, mission, or core beliefs, any of those three. And at the end, we'll collect those, we'll put them up on the board, and then we'll spend some time talking about where we see themes of shared ideas across this group. People can, you know, further explain some of their ideas, and we'll do a little bit of prioritization. So we'll start with those 10 minutes.
Any questions?
Oh, yes. Any clarifying questions?
I know this is different than a typical board meeting.
Right, that's right. You do some we work. Are asking you to do something, yeah.
Are you saying we have the choice of picking core vision?
Yes.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what color.
No,
color does not matter. And one idea per card, because we'll probably move the cards around. And, yeah.
But if you'd like to focus on the core beliefs, you have a lot of things you'd like to be in there, you can certainly start there. Or if you have ideas for what language you'd like to see in the vision or the mission, you can choose where you'd like to focus. Yeah. Just generating ideas. All right. So we'll go till about 12:20 and see where we get.
Yeah.
Any of your ideas up there? And you label them. Just made my job silly.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks.
Yes, it's going to take a little time.
Okay, I'll give you another second to work on that. Okay, which category is this?
I guess,
okay. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, she's out of the game. Given the role that you all play, right? So what we're going to do is put some of these together, and then we'll ask you to come a little closer so that you can see.
You can't see from where you are. You might want to.
We're going to ask a couple of questions and have some discussion here.
You can see?
Okay. So looking at, especially on the vision.
No, I'm good. Okay. Thank you.
Start with the vision and mission pieces. There's a little less energy here, which is okay. We can build on this. Anything, any clarifying questions that you see something up here that you want to know? What do we mean by that phrase? Or I need to know more before I know whether I agree with that or not.
As it relates to the vision?
Vision and mission especially.
Yeah, we'll pull that one.
We'll spend some more time on.
I think I know what KISS means, but I'm just going to confirm. Keep it simple, stupid, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Just making sure.
Who said that?
So someone's saying we need a simple vision.
I didn't, but you did.
Is ALL also meant to be an acronym, or is it just
no
emphasize?
Emphasize.
Okay. God has something in the vision about all students.
Okay.
Just to read the one that's written here in white, to help all students perform at their highest level of their ability. That's the suggestion there. So thinking about potential and achieving maximum potential. Any other quick clarifying questions for your colleagues?
Anything you see in these categories that you really disagree with?
In the vision
or it would be hard for you to get on board with a vision or mission that had some element of one of these ideas?
That problem is stupid. We won't put stupid.
We won't put stupid in the vision. Yeah. But
point taken.
Yes. My point was that it has to be simple.
Yes.
And you read some of the examples. They were so long that you get lost after the second sentence. You're done.
Yep. Yep.
So you can make it whatever you want, but if it can't be
right, somebody can't recite it to you.
We can't recite it.
Yep.
I almost thought about quizzing each of you and having you recite the vision and mission, but I decided that wasn't
going to
win me any friends.
Right.
What about anything that is missing now that you see these ideas together? Is it prompting any new thinking, or we need to make sure we include this concept or word as part of our
diversity and inclusion?
For a vision statement?
Yeah, separate. Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
In our vision statement, I think we should use the word inclusive or diversity. We are such a diverse
county.
And a unique
plan. Yeah, okay. So something, a suggestion to incorporate something about our diversity and strength in our vision.
Right.
Absolutely. Yep. Great. Anything else that's missing?
Particularly intrigued by, I'm always thinking about, I joke, when you do vision and mission exercises with school districts, you often end up feeling like you're doing Mad Libs, right? Like, you know, insert adjective here kind of thing. But I like when people come up with interesting ways of framing kind of similar concepts. So this idea of working from dependence to independence is interesting to me. It's different than what I've seen in elsewhere, so that intrigues me. Are there any things that you see your colleagues have suggested that you're like, well, that's intriguing to me, or I particularly like that language, it resonates with me.
Lifelong learner.
Lifelong learner, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, that's really what we're trying to do is make sure when they graduate that they're continuing to be have that love of learning when they leave our care.
Yep. Other thoughts from folks about things that particularly resonate with you?
Clear communication. Mm-hmm. Communication is key.
Yep. So you like to see that in the mission and not part of our core beliefs?
What's that, I'm sorry?
You would rather see that in the mission versus the core beliefs?
No, that's, I think that...
Because it's in the core beliefs.
I think that's still... I don't know that that falls under mission.
I do think this sort of idea of bringing stakeholders along with you could be, and if you read a lot of the mission statements, include phrases like in partnership with the community or in collaboration with the community, could be there, and it doesn't show up actually right now in your mission column. It's here in your core beliefs a lot, right? Mutual respect, stakeholders, relationships, but it didn't show up in the mission. Is that something you think is important to call out in the mission, is the sort of partnership and collaboration with community? Yeah, I'm going to put one about community, something related to community partnership or engagement. I think also it sounds like there's desire there.
Because we do an awful lot with our community. We own our schools.
I met some of them. Mm-hmm.
We involve them in selection of the superintendent. Mm-hmm. We do it before we institute a lot of times a new policy.
Right.
There's always lots of, even focus groups. Community is our, not only our bellwether, mm-hmm. but they're also our clients.
Yes.
Right.
Right, they're who you're serving. Can I ask, there's a thing, I think this is you, Mr. Colon, under innovative, it says will require change. Is that meaning we're not quite there? You don't think innovative describes
We're not quite there, but I think that if we were to include something along those lines, that would give us something to work towards in being innovative.
Right, so you're saying innovation is something that's important. We don't necessarily haven't achieved it yet, but you'd like to see it reflected. Okay. Yep. Okay, great. This is some really good language for us to work with.
Yep. Yeah, so we'll go through, we'll actually ask you all to prioritize some of these ideas in a few moments, but let's dig into the core beliefs where there was a lot of energy and interest, and Corey grouped some of similar ideas together, but I'll ask them the same questions again. So any clarifying questions, ideas you see here that you want to know, what do we mean by this?
I think one thing you can put all together is the value of human potential. Mm. And that includes just not teachers, but staff, our support groups, our maintenance workers, our bus drivers. It's our parents, all of those who surround a student on a daily basis, students in the center, that value, we have to have a value of human potential.
Yeah, well, and that aligns so much with what we heard as the most prominent strength in our feedback was your people.
Right.
Right? So how do we harness that and build that with the human potential of our staff, our students? Right.
And if you go now to my thing, Volusia.
Yes,
the very first one.
I want to make sure everybody can read Volusia. So Ms. Wright aligned her values to the acronym of
value, operate, leverage, uphold, support, integrity, and inclusiveness. Do you want to say more about your thoughts behind this?
Well, kind of what they wrote. So for value, and actually I have most of them written out exactly what they stand for. So value was from the student all the way to
everybody. Yeah.
It was a diverse group as well as our stakeholders. The other one was O was
operate.
And so operate in a manner where we're always transparent.
So that gets to sort of the communication.
Yeah, right.
Communication, the nature of respect.
Right.
Yeah. Transparency is here, but it didn't show up. So I'm going to put
that on the card. And we talk about leveraging, just looking at what some of you said, but how do we leverage the relationship with our external stakeholders? And so leveraging those relationships to help support our vision and mission statement. Uphold our core values as a district, understanding who we are and what our purpose is. Support, provide the support to our classrooms, and that one I didn't quite work out yet.
Yeah, you can see how that will work.
Yeah. Integrity, it goes back to ethics. You know, we got to have integrity at every level, from, again, from the lowest person on the tadpole all the way up to the board. We have to operate in integrity and then accountable, hold everybody, again, at every level accountable for their role in making sure we achieve our vision and mission.
It's impressive they were able to do that so quickly. I'm impressed. V is not an easy one either.
No.
And I like the accountability piece because it's something we heard isn't quite there yet. It's something we're trying to build more of. I have one question. Where did it go? Oh, meet the needs of students by providing materials. And this particularly around like the curricular and instructional material side of things.
Whatever's needed.
So sort of meeting student need.
So that goes back to support. How do we define that support?
Yeah. And I think some of these ideas actually align more with like what would be a goal or a strategy. So for example, transparency with funding. The idea of a value around transparency writ large might end up in your core beliefs, but the idea of particular to funding would probably show up in the strategic plan goals and strategies more so.
And I'm glad you asked. Do I have a question?
Yeah, please.
One of the things that I do like about Miami's strategic plan, they have one goal. That's it. So is it necessary for us to have multiple goals? Why can't we have a goal? Then how do we achieve those goals? That goal.
Right, and I think you mentioned this to me in our pre-conversation as well. I mean, I think you certainly could structure your architecture with one sort of overarching goal, and then you might call the things underneath it objectives. I bet they have a multiple objective. Our experience is in terms of structuring, it's really a design question. Okay. In the reality, at the end of the day, the ultimate goal of everything is about student achievement. And we know that as a district, and actually, I was really impressed by the number of operational staff who said the same thing, that we know we're here in service of student achievement. And you don't hear that everywhere, so that was really encouraging. So you could elevate that as the overarching goal and then think about, you know, talent management and operations being sort of sitting underneath that. I think that's an interesting idea in terms of how you communicate it. I think the question becomes then when you think about progress monitoring, we would still want a progress monitor at the level of those other areas. So it's really a design question, but we can play with that tomorrow, thinking about do we want to have kind of one achievement or aspiration and then everything sits underneath that.
But isn't that the job of the vision?
In some ways, yes. The vision I need to look at what Miami's goal language looks like. The vision is often a bit mushier. The goal would be more specific.
More.
Yes, exactly. Mushier is that's awesome.
Or something that you strongly disagree with as kind of core value, core belief basis. Student achievement should be in the vision, should be in the vision. How to about that? Yeah. So I know.
Can I say one thing? I'm sorry. I'm surprised not to see the word equity. I see inclusive culture.
Diversity
and all, but I wonder, is that a word that you all use?
equity, this idea of sort of equitable allocation of resources, making sure that there's equity in the way we're approaching this work.
It's more of a delivery work, isn't it? Equity, to make sure everything is delivered.
Yeah, or people talk about, you know, equitable opportunity for success, that kind of thing. But I just wondered if that was language that people are using already or think that we should think about how to incorporate.
I think that word I've heard used in the negative connotation. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're equal, but we're not equitable.
I'll say that last part again.
We're equal, but we're not equitable. You may have the same amount of placement specialists as all the other schools do, but that one placement specialist's load is twice as high. Mm-hmm. And so are we equal? The answer is yes, it looks good on paper.
Right, everybody has two of them.
Is it equitable? Probably not.
It's a higher bar, yeah.
Correct.
And so for me, I thought about it, but when I looked at that, I thought, put it under operate. How do we operate? Do we operate in a fair and equitable manner? Mm.
Okay. I want your notes behind what I was
saying.
I'm not going to remember it.
I'll rewrite it for you.
Sorry, Julie.
No, that's okay. I know that you all have some other business you need to get to before the end of the meeting, but we want to make sure we do some prioritization because there are a lot of ideas here. Some groupings, right? We see a lot around mutual respect, stakeholder inclusivity, stakeholder engagement, some of the mission energy around responsible or productive citizens, lifelong learning. What does it look like when students need our K-12, and how do we want to develop them for that? So we want to prioritize a little bit. We're going to give you some dots and ask that you place the dots on ideas or cards that you really want to see included as part of the vision, mission, core beliefs for the strategic plan for the next 3 years. And we'll take a picture of this, we're going to save this, we're going to use it as part of our work with the staff tomorrow so that they can see here's what's important to the school board members and the constituents that you represent going into the next phase of building the strategic plan together. So Corey's passing out the dots.
I'm giving everybody six dots.
We have six dots. So dot voting, if you've done this before, you can put all six dots on one thing. That is okay. If you've just got that one thing that you really want to make sure we highlight, you can distribute them. But each dot is equal weight. Colors don't matter.
And the idea here is just sort of what resonates most with you. Yeah. We may certainly end up including things other than what get dots, but if you really feel strongly that we would be failing in our core beliefs if we didn't include something around this, that's important to put your dot there just to let us know.
Yeah.
This resonates particularly strongly with me. This is particularly important to me.
Yeah.
So we'll give you a minute to think about it.
So is this the whole thing or just
whole thing?
Whole thing, yeah.
Which kind of
you don't have to vote in every category. Really what's most important.
What's most critical to you.
right. Thank you, everyone, for getting your dots on the board there. Corey and I will take pictures of this, bring it, summarize where the energy was. I see student achievement popping up in the vision area. I see lifelong learning and responsible citizens popping up in the mission area. We had a lot of ideas in the core beliefs, so it's not surprising to me that we've got dot distribution there. But what we can do with this is we'll bring it to the staff workshop tomorrow so that they can see where your strengths and interests lie. As far as finalizing this and actually getting to that vision and mission statement and core beliefs, we're going to workshop these ideas tomorrow with district leadership. You can expect to see more ideas or refined ideas, I should say, presented to you in the coming weeks. So this is not your last opportunity to have input on this process, but we'll have some additional feedback from you all, and then we'll finalize the vision, mission, and core beliefs as part of the building out of the architecture of the overall strategic plan. We do want to thank you all for your time and your engagement and your commitment to this process. I think it really speaks volumes to kind of the service ethic of this group that you all have put forth the time with Corey, with the advanced phone calls, with the engagement with Dr. Fritz in preparation, and with us here in the room today. So we sincerely thank you, and we are hopeful that this is indicative of, you know, kind of what to expect working together going forward, and we're excited about it.
That would be all. Board members, thank you for being engaged and participating and giving us your thoughts. They're incredibly valuable. This plan does not work without your leadership and your commitment, so we appreciate that very much. A few key points that I want to make sure that I point out. As we go through this, that stock take portion that Corey mentioned, that will be the accountability piece that staff will have with me, and then we will turn around based on the calendar that we create together, and we'll turn and report those metrics to you. But key things that were brought up in this were the terms goals, targets, and metrics. And as we go forward with this and we develop these goals and these strategies, those will be areas that staff and I will be reporting back to you in a workshop setting. And tomorrow, Corey and Julia, we look forward to working with you. We have many, many district leaders going to be starting this work, and we continue the partnership. This will be not the last time you see these two ladies. Corey's going to take a little hiatus for the baby. But
different kind of delivery to deal with.
Right. Delivery Ed, isn't that appropriate? But we will be back together with them as they will walk us through it, as we will be on target with a strategic plan ready to roll out by the end of July.
Yeah.
So, thank you. That's right.
Any other comments coming?
One more. Our whole goal is graduation. The most exciting event we have is graduation ceremonies. Mm-hmm. It's when the public all comes together, family, friends, observers, newspapers, teachers are there, board, district personnel. That is our ultimate goal. But when we hand the diploma, all of this has to be included. So all of this is included in our diploma. It's high academic standards. It's community service. It's potential to move on to the next step of their lives. So I think we also need, you know, just graduation is, we don't have to use that word, but that word of that passage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I liked the passage of dependence to independence.
Right.
Because that is what is so important. Because I always taught my students, I'm teaching you so you don't need me.
Right, trying to make yourself
yes.
Irrelevant.
Anything else? If not, we will reconvene at 3:30, and we will have our agenda meeting at 2:30. Thank you. We're dismissed.